This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Our book today is titled The Collective Legacy, Book 2 of the Vanguard Chronicles Saga. Our author who joins me from Ontario, Canada, is Lawrence Menard. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Thank you.
This is not a true story. Tell me what genre of book you would call this. Who is it designed to impress?
It's a science fiction, the genre science fiction. It's designed for those folks that want to put themselves into a situation where we've done as much harm to Earth as it's humanly possible to do, and it forces us to find alternative living arrangements on another world.
And you call this the second book of the Chronicles. The Vanguard Chronicles is a book you've already released. This one is over 380 pages, almost 400 pages. The storyline, where did you get the inspiration for that in the beginning, in the first of your series?
Well, strangely enough, it began as kind of a distorted dream, if you will. I had a dream where I was on a ship, if you will, very much like a city. And when I was on the ship, I learned from those people around me that I'd been selected to be a settler and head out into space and find a new world to live on. That's where it all began. It was, and again, the dream was a little distorted. And once I had that basic concept, the storyline took on a life of its own, if you will.
Was there an oversized meal associated with this dream?
There may have been. I'm not quite sure what I was doing the night before, but I think there was booze involved.
Uh-oh. And how did you begin this process? Did you sit down and outline a basic overview, or did you begin by inspired thought and just start writing?
Well, I began by just simply describing the ship that I found myself on, which was anything but an ordinary escape pod, if you will. And it just kind of went on from there, because I wanted to find out, I wanted to imagine how people would react in a situation where they were forced to leave their homes and get thrown into situations where they had absolutely no idea how they were going to contend with the challenges.
You mentioned to me that you are currently retired from a career that was non-typical and certainly non-author related. Have you always had a passion for writing?
Yes, yes. Well, I did a lot of writing in the job that I had, but it was very business writing. But I used to write kids stories just for my children. And once I had this dream, I just my kids actually prompted me into expanding it out into a storyline. So,
you mentioned a couple of I would guess key characters in your book, or key types of characters. The Mantrells is one, and the Bergerac Empire, and then James Chandler. How do those three elements fit into your storyline?
Well, when these folks arrive at their new home, which is a planet they named Legacy. Although the planet was very much like Earth, the inhabitants of that planet, if you will, were sometimes not very human-like, and they were faced with these challenges. And one of those challenges was an animal, I guess you will call him an animal, called a mantrel. And a mantrel is a creature not dissimilar to a werewolf, if you want to describe him as that. And his role in the book is to offer real threat to the human settlers, in that he herds humans on other planets for his own consumption. And he's decided now that he wanted to do the same thing with the people of Legacy, and how they defend against this creature that is vicious, to say the least, and horrific at times. James Chandler is the warrior and the son of the man who originally found the planet Legacy, and he's a warrior by nature, and he's going to have nothing to do with these creatures trying to kill off the population of his new world. So his role is very dynamic, and he can be as mean, if you will, as the creatures themselves in defending his people. The Bergerac Empire is a force outside the planet who wants to take over the universe, and they have the power to do that. And the next target on their radar is Legacy, and how the people on Legacy defend themselves against these lizard-like creatures that are human in general form, if you will. But that's where the similarity ends. Their skins are very lizard-like. They speak a language that is foreign to anybody on that we know of, and that kind of carries on in how they defeat these things. Right?
You have other key characters, James Donner, Joshua Evans, Ryan Evans, and Catherine Chandler, and others. Which of those would be the strongest lead if it was to be put into a movie?
Definitely, it would be James Chandler, but James Donner. Unfortunately, they have the same first name. James Donner is the warrior mentor to Chandler, and his mother, whose name is Sabrina, is probably the most influential person on the planet, and she's very much family-oriented and very much a supporter of both James and both Jameses, if you will, and the legacy of the planet itself. Right.
In writing your book, did you have a target audience in mind besides those that love this style of writing? Is this suitable for, say, young adults all the way through to old guys like me?
This book would be not so suitable for children up to about the age 14 or 15, because it has some adult content. It has some language, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the themes of it tend to be fairly violent in some parts of it. Others of it is very family-oriented, but that's less of the focus. It's more about defending yourselves against evils. Right?
Would you also describe this as an action-adventure?
Yes, I would.
What is the key underlying message that you were trying to achieve in writing this, besides the entertainment value?
I think how I set this thing out was that I wanted to show that family can be more than just bloodlines. Family can be a group of people who share a passion, who share a number of other things that come together as an ensemble, if you will, and together they come up with the solution, whatever that solution is. And that's really the underlying theme to the whole book, surviving as a family where you're not necessarily related.
There's a lot of my authors are journalers. Do you possibly journal to keep track of all those wonderful dreams that you have?
No, that typically that wasn't my history. My history was, like most fathers and grandfathers, was to relate to the family and go about my working day. So this was kind of a switch for me to start doing this type of stuff. So apart from that dream, no, I never kept journals.
And do you also have a specific creative process that you go through when you begin writing a book? Some authors, you know, will go to the local coffee shop and sit there and write on napkins. Others will get themselves steeled away into a small space, maybe an office, and just don't want to be disturbed. How does it work with you?
Well, most of the two first books I wrote sitting on my bed just before going to sleep and plugging away and off I would go. I never sat down deliberately to write the books nonstop, if you will, right? Because
right.
I found myself, after I wrote a little bit of it and had a night of sleep, more things would come to my brain as my imagination kept adding to the plot, if you will. So that's kind of how I wrote it. It was kind of ad hoc.
Right. And you mentioned that there are these invaders are not Earthlings. Do you describe the spaceship or transportation in any detail?
That they come at us in,
yes,
or that how we got to the planet in the first place?
All of the above.
well, the ship that brought the, and I call them the Children of Vanguard because the series of ships that were built to escape Earth were called the Vanguard series. So the Vanguard 6, which is the ship they were on, is about 25 miles long and 5 miles wide, and it's, wow, a city. It's virtually a city in space. And they live out their lives, and when they left Earth, finding legacy wasn't a two-year exercise. It actually took them over 200 years, so generations have lived and died aboard this ship before they finally get to where they want to be. The Bergerac ships tend to be your typical fare for science fiction, which tends to be sophisticated, somewhat ugly-looking vessels that are loaded with weapons and are not pretty to look at, but certainly get your imagination going. And so it's kind of in that. So in that vein, I kind of followed the original theme. Only in the Vanguard arcs did I kind of explode the vessels into something that was a little fanciful, if you will.
Well, how would you describe your book to someone on the street if you just met them and they found out that you were an author?
I would say that that the book is basically that mankind has finally destroyed his environment so badly that he has to leave Earth. And like the settlers that left their homes in the U.S. and went west towards California, these people are essentially the same thing, only they're going out into deep space. They're naive. They have absolutely no idea what they're going to face when they get to wherever they're going, if they'll ever get to where they're going. And so it's that kind of a book. So you could easily have transplanted this back into the 1800s and said these were settlers moving across the country. It's just that the risks are greater, or maybe not, and the methods of dealing with the risk are more sophisticated than might have been back in those days. So.
Yes, and this is set in future tense. What year?
3126 is when they leave Earth.
3126. What were the challenges in writing this, getting it to print?
It wasn't so much the imagination of creating the plot and doing all that. The challenges were developing characters and staying true to the characters you develop, because they have dramatically different personalities, if you will. So as you're writing the book and you're speaking on behalf of each of these characters, you have to remember their base personalities and not get so that people get confused over who's doing the talking, if you will, right? So
right, and
that was the biggest challenge for me, separating personalities.
And then carrying the characters, or at least the theme, into other parts of this series also would be a challenge.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, there is some changing characters in book two from book one, and I won't go in why they changed, but I prefer people who read book one. And they change it again going into book three, because simply years and years passed between these book themes, if you will. So it's 17 years from book one to book two in the book, and it's another 6 years from book two to book three in the book.
And how long did it take to complete?
Book two took me almost a year.
A year. Not too bad for a relatively new author in the industry. The title of this book is The Collective Legacy, Book 2 of the Vanguard Chronicles Saga. Our author, Lawrence Menard. Larry, where do we get copies of your book?
They're not available in bookstores as of yet, but they're available on the internet through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Google Books, those types of websites. They're also available at the Trafford Bookstore, which is the publisher, and I hope everyone buys the book and enjoys the read.
Have you also launched a website?
Not as of yet.
But you're working on it.
Bit novice at all this stuff, so the Trafford folks are kind of leading me through this material, so hopefully I get to be really good at it. So.
Fabulous. Well, listeners, you can do a search under Lawrence Menard, M-E-N-A-R-D, and keep track of not only this book in the series, but anything else that comes out in the future. Larry, thank you for joining me today, sir.
Thank you very much for your time.
For Indie Book Publishing Trafford Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Six of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear the latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title is Stay in Your Own Lane, Pre-Paving a Smooth Path for Yourself Using the Principles of the Law of Attraction. I think this has more to do with personal life than it does with driving automobiles. My guest, joining me from Florida, is author Betty Ferguson. Betty, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jay.
This is a topic that has been discussed and rediscussed in many ways, and yet you have a unique twist on it. What is your concept? Why did you feel inspired to write Stay in Your Own Lane?
Well, Jay, so many people have things in their life that they're not happy with, and they really just don't know what to do about it. And when The Secret came out, the movie The Secret, you know, everybody was talking about the law of attraction and everything, and then it just kind of went away, as things do. But the law of attraction is in your life every minute of every day, so I decided to write a kind of a 101 type book about it for those who don't know anything about it and are interested in how to change your life. Most of the books about the law of attraction are more in-depth and scientific than that. This is a plain English, easy-to-read book that just gives them the information they need.
Just over 100, so it's a short read. You have distilled the concept down into a very easy read then for the individual that wants to learn more.
Correct, and it's also a reminder for those who are all into the law of attraction. We all need that from time to time. I read it over every once in a while just to remind myself even of the things that you need to do and how to stay in a positive energy level that to make things work for you better.
I've always assumed that the law of attraction had to do with taking a shower once a day and kind of putting on great clothing. This is not what this is about. This is about spiritual growth in its own way.
Well, it's basically about your energy level. The law of attraction is like attracts like. So when you're in a high level of energy, you attract people and places, things that are also a high level of energy and a positive thing. If you're an angry, negative person, that's what you're sucking to you. So it's all about your level of energy, and that's really what the law of attraction is about.
What's the first step that you outline in your book?
To find peace within yourself. When you learn to have a peaceful life for yourself, then you notice when it's not. You know, you notice when other people are trying to dump drama and anger and things into your life because you learn to be peaceful yourself, and you like that, and you really want to stay there. You don't want all their stuff in your life anymore.
You also are a coach. Do I understand that correctly?
Correct. I am a law of attraction life coach. I thoroughly enjoy that, helping people with their issues. I also have put a workshop. I followed up the book with a workshop, Getting From Here to There, on my website to help people along, that they can go at their own pace. So either I do the coaching, or they can take the workshop.
This is your second book. Was your first book dealing with a similar topic, or was it different?
Well, it wasn't about the law of attraction. It's called By the Grace of God, The Skin of My Teeth, and Friends. It's about hanging on in the tough times.
Important topic also. The Law of Attraction, yes. The basics of the Law of Attraction on page 21. What do you outline in the basics of the Law of Attraction?
Well, I explain what things are negative in your life and what things are positive in your life, and explain the difference of the two and how sometimes we think we're being positive, but we're not.
And you focus on things and suggest that humans, which all of us, I think, are, need to stay away from fear, worry, doubt, anger, guilt, blame, judgment, complaining, impatience, all the things that seem to attack every human on the planet. What is the first step in order to change that mindset?
Everything depends on what you're thinking about and focusing on. So to change your attitude and the things in your life, you have to change your own focus and the things that you think about and focus on.
And you recommend, of course, something that's fairly straightforward, to have a positive mental attitude. Mental attitude, PMA, is one way it's discussed, and that has to do with living a peaceful life, minding your own business, never having to win. That's a tough one.
Well, yes, but, you know, when you're in an argument with someone or even having a discussion with someone, you can speak your piece, but they're probably not going to listen to you. So what's the point? I mean, you're just dragging yourself out of your high energy level into a lower energy level of the argument or whatever, the discussion that's maybe not so positive. And if you let go of the need to win, you don't attract that negativity to you. And you need to learn to do that, because that's another one of the things that will bring you down out of your high energy level, which affects what your life is about. The whole thing is about you. You know, you're not responsible for anyone else. You can't fix or change anyone else's life. Let them do their own thing. They're on their own path. And that's the whole thing about the book, is just pretty much mind your own business and just stay in your own lane.
You have also mentioned God. You say faith in God will get you through anything. What is your philosophy about God and his influence in our lives?
Well, I think, you know, the Spirit of God is in everyone, and so he's in your life 24/7, and you don't have to go to church on Sunday or Christmas or Easter to be close to God. You can talk to him anytime, any, just in a normal conversation. You can say, hey, need a little help here, or whatever. I mean, he's listening to you all the time. He's just part of your life all the time. So when people say, well, I'm not religious, well, okay, but he still loves you. You know, he's still got your back. He's still going to make sure that things are okay for you. And when they're not, it's basically because of your choice, your thoughts, your focus, and what you're sucking to you, because the Law of Attraction responds to your focus and your thoughts, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent.
When you began to write this, who did you think your book would appeal to, and why?
Anybody and everyone. Because it's a way to change your life, and it's easy to read, and it's not an in-depth conversation about it. You know, people start reading a book and they're like, oh, this is over my head. I don't even want to, or it's not interesting or whatever. People always tell me that I write like I talk, so it's like I'm sitting on the couch next to them talking to them when they're reading my books. And I just wanted anyone and everyone to be able to pick up the book and get an idea about the Law of Attraction. If you choose to do it, then that's your choice, you know, but at least you have the information and you find out why, when things go wrong, they went wrong, because you were thinking about and focusing on negative things and attracting more of that to you.
Positive definitely attracts positive. I will agree with you there. The LOA, or Law of Attraction, that is a great concept that I think anybody can benefit. Do you feel everyone can benefit and adapt these concepts and ideas to their life?
Absolutely. Anyone and everyone will benefit from this book. I was just going to say, when people read the book, they want to pass it along. They're like, oh, I know who needs to read this. I know who needs to read this. Everybody needs to read it, because it does explain the difference between having things go wrong in your life and having things go right, and how to change it, and what the difference is, and how to make that work for you.
And this is based on experience, not just theory.
Absolutely.
Take a couple of paragraphs and influence my listeners to get a copy of your book.
A couple paragraphs of the book?
Not the book itself, but just share with my listeners. If you were to meet them on the street, how would you introduce this book to them?
Well, I would tell them that the things that they're not happy with in their life is something that, again, they're attracting to them, and you need to find a way around that. You need to get above that. You need to learn to be in a high level of energy, because we're all in energy. You can have it be positive or you can have it be negative, and that's your choice. But when it's positive, your life just goes right along. And it doesn't necessarily happen in the next second, but it does happen. The more you focus on positive things, the more good things come into your life, good people, good situations. You don't seem to attract negative people anymore. You don't seem to attract negative situations anymore, because you have learned that your energy level does make a difference, and you learn how to stay above it when you read the book.
You've mentioned that there are other books in the marketplace, but yours, because it's a short read, does that make it unique or different?
I think it does, more because it's just plain old English. It's not all written with a bunch of editors that say, no, you have to say it this way or that way. I fought that. I was like, no, I want to say it like I say it, because that's how people talk. That's how people read. That's how people understand. Just, this is how it is. And I think it does make a difference how a book is written. And I really wrote it for the people who maybe don't even like to read very much. That's why I also make it a short book. It's only at most like a 2 to 3 hour read, because there's a lot of people who don't want to sit around reading a book for a week. They want to get the information and get on with their life and go on. And that's what this book provides them.
How long did it take Betty to complete this particular book, Stay in Your Own Lane?
I would say about 4 to 5 months, and that includes editing and re-editing, and having other people read it and re-editing it again, just for the grammar and things like that, catching a word that was printed wrong or whatever, and then getting it to the publisher and going through that whole process.
Were there any challenges in that process in getting it completed?
Not in the writing of it. When I sit down to write, I just seem to be able to just write and then go back and edit a little bit. But the publishing process is a little more lengthy and a little more involved. Going back and forth with the publisher.
It does take a while to get those aspects of publishing a book completed. This one is titled Stay in Your Own Lane, Prepaving a Smooth Path for Yourself Using the Principles of the Law of Attraction. Our author, Betty Ferguson, has joined me from Florida. Betty, where do we get copies of your book?
Well, you can go to my website, which is elawofattraction.com, or it's on Amazon, and either one of those places will get you to it. It's available in hardcover, softcover, or as an ebook.
Thank you, Betty, for sharing the background story into your publication, Stay in Your Own Lane. Are you planning a sequel?
I am. I had to take a year off for health reasons, but the next one will be called Say This, Not That.
Fabulous. Look forward to visiting with you when that's completed as well. Thank you, Betty, for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay. I appreciate it.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Our book today is titled God's Presence in the Life of an Ordinary Woman, an autobiography. And our author who joins me from, I believe it's Mississippi, Kitty McCaffrey. Am I correct in where you're located?
I'm located in Florida.
In Florida, Mississippi. Well, no, I'm sorry. That is Florida as a state. I was confused because I think in our original, it was Jacksonville. That's what threw me off. We mentioned Jacksonville, and I was assuming it was Mississippi. That's actually Florida. Thank you for joining me today, Kitty. This book, autobiography, this is not your first book. It's your third. What was the impetus, the inspiration behind putting this to print?
Well, I'm an old lady, and I was in pain for 3 years, and I got it in my head that I was going to die. Hmm. So I got busy and wrote my autobiography because my story is very, very special. Things have happened to me that I couldn't believe were happening. Not bad things, good things. And so I wrote my autobiography.
Your formula is know God, obey God, and then the outcome is God's favor. Is that how you have lived your life and how you've shared your story?
That no is K-N-O-W, know God.
Correct.
And obey Him. And that's when good things start happening.
Share a little bit about your background. You have been an author for a while. How long and when did you decide that becoming an author was an important goal you wanted to achieve?
Actually, I was a school administrator and a classroom teacher for 50 years. And when I retired, I was lost. I just didn't know what to do with myself. And I thought, here in Florida, we have the FCAT test. And I had to teach students to write 5-paragraph essays for that test. And I thought one day as the school bus went by, you know, I've taught other people to do this. I can do it. So I came in and started a book. I thought it would take me maybe a year. In 9 weeks, the book was finished.
Incredible.
Yes. And then I was a single mother, and I raised 2 sons. And this is my second book. It's a self-help book for single mothers. And its name is Raising Charlie, which is my younger son. And then I always thought I should tell my story. But I jumped a little ahead because after I wrote the book, some wonderful things happened to me that I want in the book. I don't know how to get them there now that the book has been selling for 2 years.
Incredible life story also, which you outline in God's Presence in the Life of an Ordinary Woman, an autobiography. Yeah. What is the keystone or the foundation that your story begins on?
Well, my mom was a single mother. A lot of bad things happened to her in life, and she was determined that I would quit school. February in the 10th grade, I turned 16, and the law in North Carolina where I was living was that you could take a child out of school or the child could quit at 16.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was common for the mill people who worked in the factories to take their kids out of school in the 10th grade and put them to work in a mill. I really, really did not want to do that. Not that I thought I was uppity, but mother worked in a factory for 55 years. Every time I went in that factory, just the table where she sat was vibrating, and it hurt my teeth. I was thinking, wow, I do not want to go to work in any of these factories. So when I was 16, I bargained with my mom. I said, Mom, how much would I make if I worked in the mill all week? And she told me, I said, well, what if I told you that I would give you that amount of money every Saturday night? Would you let me stay in school? Mm-hmm. She said, well, you can't do that. And the minute she said I couldn't do it, I was determined I was going to do it. I ironed Elam Cook's shirts every week. He was a neighbor. His wife didn't like to iron. I babysat the people across the street's three children because they owned a restaurant. Got, you know, they were in the restaurant till 11 o'clock, so it was late when I would go to bed. I sold Avon Cosmetics, and I worked at Belk's Department Store. And for 2.5 years, every single week I gave Mom that amount of money that I would have made in the mill.
Amazing. And becoming an educator, how'd that happen?
Oh, my, it was an accident. We got a new guidance counselor the year that I was a senior in high school in January, and she sat in my church up front. In my church, everybody really made an effort to sit in the back, and I felt sorry for her. And so I went down to the front and sat with her. The second Sunday I sat with her, she said, "Kitty, where are you going to college?" And I said, "Miss Peoples, I can't go to college. I'm a mill kid." She said, "What's a mill kid?" And I said, "It's my family works in the factories." She said, "Oh." The next morning she handed me an application to fill out to go to Mars Hill Junior College. And I said, "Well, my clothes are made out of flour sacks. You know, I can't go to college. I don't have any money. I don't have any transportation. I can't. I just go." She said, "No, you fill that out. Let's see what happens." Then she told me I needed my class rank from my homeroom teacher, who happened to be my English teacher. Mean, horrible woman. And so I asked her for my class rank, and she screamed in front of the whole class, "Why do you need your class rank?" I said, "Because I'm going to apply to go to college." "Well, Kitty Dean Hester, you are not college material." The minute that came out of her mouth, I was determined. So on scholarship, work scholarship, I went to Mars Hill for 2 years. It was a junior college and a wonderful school. And then I worked in the summer and saved enough money to do one quarter at Appalachian State. And they did not give scholarships except to football players. That made me mad. Mm-hmm. And so I applied for a scholarship. And the registrar called me to his office and said, "You know, I have to know something, young lady." I thought, "Oh, God, he's going to be mad with me. My check bounced. He got that application to play on the football field." And so I just opened it up. I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "I don't really play football. That was just a joke." He didn't know what I was talking about, so that was good. He said, "How would you like to go to Appalachian free for 2 years?"
Wow.
I said, "Well, you don't have any scholarships except football." And he said, "But it's not from the college. It is from the state organization called COET, Council on Teachers Education. They paid my way for 2 years. I never wanted to teach, and I didn't want to work in a factory. So at the end of 2 years, because I had that scholarship, I was required to teach 2 years in North Carolina. So because they gave me 2 years in college, I gave them 2 years of my life, and within 6 weeks after I started teaching, I was hooked."
Amazing. I think that I know who is going to benefit and find your story provocative and interesting, but from your perspective, who did you write this for?
I wrote it for anyone who's willing to read it. They asked me what I wanted on the cover of the book, and it didn't take me long to figure it out. They have a huge tree, which is the tree of life. It symbolizes the tree of life. There's light beams coming through the tree. And the light is the light of the world, Jesus Christ. And there's a white dove above the tree representing the Holy Spirit. And I think that every person who calls themselves a Christian should act like a Christian. And in acting like a Christian, you do good for other people because you're a servant of God. That's what we're all here for. That's the purpose of our life, to serve God. That's just it. I've had many people to say, "I wish I knew my purpose." Well, it's the same for every one of us. You know, we may be serving him by feeding the homeless. We may be serving him by writing a book like this, that people can see what happens to people who do good things and people who are in God's favor. And it's really for anyone who will read it. I have some Muslim Facebook friends who are reading it. I have almost every Christian at my church, which is a big church, has read it. And it just keeps going. It was published 2 years ago this month. And so the audience is for anyone who will pick it up and read it.
You've managed to write over 300 pages. How would you introduce this in a couple of sentences to someone you meet on the street and they find out, hey, I'm talking to Kitty McCaffrey, the author?
I recently went to a big event, and as I walked in, I heard, that's Kitty McCaffrey. That's Kitty McCaffrey.
Wow.
I know I was blushing all over because I didn't expect anyone to know who I was. I would say that if you should read this book, because you can actually see a little girl who wore flour sack dresses. It doesn't matter how poor you were. Who got a good education. I even got a scholarship to Duke University for my master's degree and to FSU for my doctorate. I never paid a penny for any course.
Wow.
And someone who's struggling, you know, this book is just for anyone. And the things that have happened to me in life are available to anyone who will just put forth the effort to be themselves, to be what God expects them to be.
And through it all, you have remained constant in your faith.
I've slipped. I have had, my mother taught me that anger was an instrument of the devil. I don't know how she knew that. My degree in Duke was from psychology. They never said that. But that's what my mother believed, and so I didn't lose my temper for a long time. But probably in the 1970s, one day I lost my temper. It felt good. And I try to control my mouth and my anger, and, you know, I have been jealous of people. I've done human things because I'm a human being. But, you know, you can be forgiven for those. It says in the Lord's Prayer, please forgive me as I forgive those around me. So it's very important to forgive, and it's important for you to forgive yourself. And don't think that you've just so messed up that you're never going to get back on the right track, because the right track is right there waiting for you to come on it.
Right. Your book talks about your path and your inspiration, God's presence in the life of an ordinary woman, an autobiography, our author, Kitty McCaffrey. Kitty, where can my listeners get copies of your book?
They can order them through Westbow Press. They can look up, I don't have the address right here, but they can look it up on the internet. It's on barnesandnoble.com. It's on amazon.com.
They also can do a search under your name, Kitty McCaffrey, spelled, the Kitty is with two T's, and McCaffrey is McCaffrey. And keep in contact with you regarding the books you have already published and those that may be in the future. What's next for you?
Well, what's next? One of the biggest problems in the United States now, and I started this before all these children came from Honduras and Mexico and whatever. I'm writing on immigration because in 1946 we had no place in Jacksonville except Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church, where they taught English to foreigners at 10 o'clock in the morning. Well, what about foreigners who had a job? So I started a class at the junior college at night, two nights a week, to teach immigrants and refugees English. And I've been doing that ever since. Right now I'm volunteering with World Relief. And these people have horrible, horrible stories. And yet I have people who are supposed to be Christians who come up to me and say, why are you spending your time with those refugees, Kitty? You could spend your time a lot more wisely. They need to go back where they came from. And I'm thinking, oh, little do you know, ma'am, what you have just said is so inaccurate.
Mm.
So I'm hoping through my book that I will change some minds.
I'm sure you will. You have a wonderful story that you have recounted in the book, God's Presence in the Life of an Ordinary Woman, an autobiography. And I guess you could call it a love poem or a love story to God. So I would maybe subtitle it that from my perspective, God's Presence in the Life of an Ordinary Woman, an autobiography, our author, Kitty McCaffrey. Thank you, Kitty, for joining me today and sharing your story.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.